It was the Saturday before Easter, and Winthrop sat alone in Bunnyland, a gay, brightly painted toy village on the sixth floor of a big New York department store. The salesman looked down at Winthrop, and then he looked at the ad. It said that for $2.98, one could become the owner of a real live Easter bunny, guaranteed to be healthy, color fast, washable, and docile. A vaporweight, hop-skip, happy animal of luxurious, silky feel. Winthrop was not the powder puff, fluffy kind that sold by the dozen. He was just a plain rabbit. But he was lucky. A lover of animals and a man without prejudices approached at that moment and said, "I'll take him." And Winthrop was on his way to the upper west side of Manhattan. The two children of the animal lover threw themselves into the proper Easter spirit. A nest was built for him. He was petted and loved and tenderly squeezed. And he was fed. Oh, how he was fed. It started with chopped chicken liver, followed by mushroom barley soup, creamed spinach, cauliflower with butter sauce, and for dessert he had rum cake, baked apple, and chocolate ice cream. His stomach was distended, and he dreamed heavily. But the next day, he got lots of exercise. He was bathed, he got a small collar and leash, and was led along the sidewalk. Several times, he started to hop, skip, and then suddenly performed a somersault, forgetting that he was tied, and that always brought a lot of laughs. It was on the third day of this new life that Winthrop began to doubt his good fortune. In an argument over his very body and soul, all tenderness was forgotten. Shouting, "It's my rabbit!" the little girl pulled at his ears, while the brother, screaming, "He's mine!" got a grip on his leash, and he was stretched and twisted. He heard a rushing of water like a waterfall in his aching head, and his length seemed twice what it ordinarily was. "If this keeps on, there isn't going to be any rabbit," said the father the next evening. He took the limp object of their affection and carried it out in the hall, and with some impatience he put, or rather dropped, Winthrop in a closet. The children were in the hall, pounding the closet door and setting up a howl. "I want my rabbit," they both cried now. Inside, it was dark. Winthrop groped over overshoes and bumped into an electric heater. The pounding continued, and it was then that he heard the words, "There isn't going to be any rabbit." Winthrop felt cold and shuddered. After a nervous, nightmarish fit of sleep, Winthrop awoke. It was later than 10 o'clock that night before the children had got to sleep. And the heavy footfall came toward the closet. The key turned in the lock, and the man whispered to his wife to bring him a box. Winthrop wondered if it would be his coffin. He was put into it, and the lid was clamped down. A few minutes after, Winthrop found himself carried down the stairs, across the street. Suddenly, the box was put down. There was a sweet smell. Maybe gas, thought poor Winthrop. It was, however, the tender, trembling perfume of narcissus, for the animal lover had deposited Winthrop in the great open world that is Central Park. Winthrop felt like running after the man and thanking him for his release. He hopped about, nibbling and drinking out of an old paper cup that had been half-filled by rain. He stretched himself and then went mad with joy, running uphill and downhill. Then, in a dry and cozy corner, shaded from the glare of the street lamps, Winthrop lay down. Only one who has known how troubled life can be has a real appreciation of it when it is good, he reflected. The drowsy music of the city all around him was his lullaby. Mr. Horatio Jefferson Tompkins was in the habit of giving his dog an airing before starting the day's work. He entered the park just at 7:30. When he came to that hidden glade near 104th Street, he always stopped and first, carefully turning to see whether a policeman was about, he would undo the leash and allow the animal to stretch his legs. The whippet usually set out on his morning canter. Now, he raised his right front paw, stood frozen for a moment, and looked at a rabbit. The rabbit looked at him, and then quickly sat up and suddenly left as fast as he could. A race was on, across the road and down the stretch to 102nd Street, through a small forest of birch trees to 92nd Street, and then out into the wide open field. It's an old rabbit trick to vary the course and cut corners. Just as he was about to catch up on his quarry, the whippet found himself running after nothing. And while he changed his direction, Winthrop gained time and repeated the maneuver so that the dog ran twice as much and shot past him a dozen times. And in long leaps, Winthrop ran down the bridle path toward 72nd Street. A lady of considerable weight was taking her reducing ride on a rented horse. Both of them were swaying along comfortably when Winthrop cut a sharp corner under the big mare. The horse suddenly reared, and the lady came down. The whippet jumped clear over her and then stopped to look for the rabbit, and he was out of sight. The whippet, with his tail lashing, picked up the scent. It led over a small wooden bridge to a rocky island. And at the last point of that sat the rabbit. The game seemed to be up. "Don't come near me, or I'll jump," said Winthrop, who held on to the desperate idea that, after all, this might be just a game. But the whippet dug his hind feet into the soft ground and arched his back, and the rabbit leaped. As he plunked into the water, he suddenly remembered that he couldn't swim a stroke. He found himself among the stalks of water plants. Air bubbles rose from his nose and mouth. He turned slowly and sank, and everything about him went black. As the last of a series of air bubbles, glub, glub, came up from the rabbit, the oldest and hardiest frog that inhabited the pond in Central Park, into which Winthrop had dived, sank down to him and listened to his heart. He swam to the stalk of a lily leaf and shook it to awaken his son, who had the careless habit of taking the sun stretched out on that leaf. The son dove down. "You take the front," said the father frog, taking hold of the hind legs, and with swift strokes of their powerful web-footed hind legs, they took Winthrop upward and dragged him out under the protection of some leaves. Gradually, the color came back into his ears, and he uttered the question of all those who come back from near death, "Where am I?" "Just take it easy," said the father frog. His kind eyes went from the rabbit to the sun, who had climbed back on his leaf to resume his interrupted sun bath. "Don't talk if you don't feel like it," said the old frog. But Winthrop's heart was full, and he told his rescuer the last chapter of his life, going back as far as the bargain sale at which the animal lover had bought him. "Well," said the frog, "so you're finding out what it's like. Now my boy there, he's an incurable optimist." He pointed to the lily leaf where his son reposed. "He dreams of tomorrow's summer flies. Don't worry, Pop, he says to me. When everybody is engaged in extermination and they're spraying everything with DDT. Look, life is precarious. The reservoirs are drying up. Do you know we're the only two left here? Have you heard what's been going on?" The rabbit sat up, eager to hear the other story, when a shadow passed over the leaves. There was a swish and a splash. There were waves that reached up to where they sat, and the lily leaf trembled, and the young frog was gone. The bird of prey, the cormorant, was still underwater. Suddenly, he rose and took off. He had the unfortunate frog sideways in his beak, threw him up into the air, and with deadly accuracy caught him again so that he disappeared down the bird's gullet head first. For a while, there was the silence that follows lightning. Then the old frog wiped the tears from his eyes, and when at long last he found his voice, he sobbed, "I must have told them 1,000 times. If I told them once to stay off that leaf, now I'm all alone."
"I'll stay here with you."
"That's very nice. But this is no place for you. Nothing to eat here. You better move on."
"Well, anyway, I'll stay tonight," said Winthrop, who had no appetite for food or further adventure. As it got dark, the old frog began to talk.
"You know, at one time, this was a happy place. Parties, picnics, swimming and diving, concerts, community singing. And then comes this bird. In 1 week, everybody loses a relative, and then they all disappear."
"Isn't there anybody who can help?"
"No," said the frog. "Not us. Us frogs are too little. There's a place where you'd be safe, though."
"Where's that?"
"The zoo," said the frog. "The finest food, specially prepared."
"How do I get there?" asked the rabbit.
"The way is dangerous," said his friend. "The place is full of dogs, and you don't want to run into any more of those." "Let me think. Now, there's a man must weigh about 200 pounds, and he has a wife who's as big as he, and they go to the west side to do their shopping because prices there are lower. And he's an animal lover, too. On the way home, they always walk through the zoo. They have a small shopping cart that he drags in back of him, and that's the way to get to the zoo safely."
Just as the frog had said, the couple appeared. The rabbit said goodbye to his friend, and cautiously he approached the cart. He parted some greenery and carefully climbed inside. In a moment, he had forgotten all his troubles. In front of him stood a fat stalk of celery and a bunch of tender leeks. His nose trembled with excitement. He carefully sank his teeth into the celery. His ears were up. "Look, Mama," said the man. "The lilac bush is broughten." "Yeah, everywhere you step is bring," said Mama. "You have the rabbit?" asked Papa. "I got one in the icebox."
"A big one?"
"Yeah. Also, if Otto and Hubert come for dinner, it's not enough. You know the appetite they got."
"Why don't you make it a stew?"
"Yeah, meet a bunch of leeks. I dry out a new pressure cooker."
"I have no confidence in this newfangled stuff. Make an old-fashioned Hasenpfeffer. Meat noodles."
The two wobbled along with their prisoner in tow, discussing recipes for Hasenpfeffer. Poor Winthrop, he felt as if he were already in a pot with the vegetables. At one time, the argument became particularly heated, and needing both hands to explain his point, the man left the cart leaning up against a low cement wall which held the iron bars of a cage. It smelled of hay, and it was getting dark. Winthrop parted the leaves of the celery and skipped out. Once again, he had escaped, but only for a second, for from the gray shadows, an unwieldy figure slowly emerged, a creature such as he had never imagined existed. It had small eyes in an immense head, and it stretched a long arm toward Winthrop. At the end of this arm, however, was no hand. There was only a finger. And this finger examined him carefully. It went all over him. As the creature came closer, he saw that its immense stomach was pink with black spots.
"Don't be scared," said the elephant.
He reached up to where the windows of a two-story house should be, and from a crack he brought some peanuts and a small piece of chocolate. He gave them to the rabbit and sat down in a corner, his hide scraping against the rough cement wall. He was, he said, depressed and lonesome.
"In 75 years of lonesomeness, one would think," he said, "that one could get used to it, but one doesn't."
From far away, some music floated into the cage. It was a band playing in Central Park Mall, and they played "None But the Lonely Heart."
"Oh, that doesn't help any either. A radio, at least, you can turn off, but not the band. It's good music, though. Most I like waltzes. You may not think so, but I am light on my feet. I'm a great Viennese waltzer."
He turned lightly and moved from one end of his house to the other. As he danced, his little tail swung in three-quarter time.
"Very elegant," said the rabbit.
But there's no one to waltz with. See what I mean?"
"I am finding out that life is not as beautiful as people think," said the rabbit. And then, by way of cheering up the lonesome elephant, he told him the story of the lonesome frog. The elephant was so moved that he had to take a bundle of hay to dry his tears, and he said,
"Frogs, nice little people. Why, it's ages since I've seen a frog. It was the winter of 1875. Yes, a little girl came to see me, and everybody fed me peanuts. But she had no peanuts. She had a little fur muff, and she put her hand in it and looked for something to give me. Of all the people who came and looked at me, she was the only one that felt how lonesome I was. And you'll never guess what she gave me. In the muff bag, she had a little frog, a green frog, the prettiest frog you ever saw. He was made of glass. One hand was on his chest, and he had his mouth open, just as if he were singing an aria from an Italian opera.
Have you still got it?
I'm coming to that. Well, I should have hidden it. Like a fool, I kept it around. I had it for 50 years. But one day, the director comes by unexpectedly, and he sees it and takes it. Made me awful mad.
And where is it now?
Well, I guess my frog is still standing on that desk over in the administration building. Makes me mad every time I think about it.
He sat up a while and listened to the last piece of music, and then he softly added,
"Figuring on staying here for a while?"
"I'd like to stay, if it's all right with you," said the rabbit.
"Sure it's all right with me. Besides, it's a zoo, isn't it?" "Good night."
The rabbit couldn't sleep. He lay on one side and then the other. And after a while, he said, "Are you asleep?" The elephant didn't answer. The rabbit got up and went out. The lamps were lit, and there was a light in the administration building. He watched the building for a while and then crept forward to the entrance. Swiftly, he ran upstairs, hopped on the swivel chair, and from there onto the desk, emptying the frog of the paper clips with which he had been filled. He took him under his arm and raced back to the elephant's house. Now, he had no trouble sleeping. The elephant was speechless the next morning.
"My beautiful little frog, my little glass frog."
Suddenly he said to the rabbit,
"I'm no longer lonesome now because I've got you. That little frog you've been telling me about, that's the guy who should really have my frog. He needs him more than I do."
The rabbit agreed, but he told the elephant how difficult it would be to get the frog over to the pond.
"It's easy. Ever heard of P-A-L?
The rabbit shook his head.
"Well, P-A-L, that stands for the Police Athletic League. Tomorrow they have an outing in the park. All day long there's festivities and parades, and the place is full of police. There's a parade due, marching past here about 2 p.m. You get yourself right up with the big brass and march along. Nobody will dare to touch you, and when you get to the pond, you fall out. Then you wait and come back with them."
The rabbit was up early the next day. The elephant found a piece of bunting hanging in the branches of a tree, and when Winthrop was properly dressed, his friend took the glass frog down and handed it to him. Boom, boom, boom was heard in the distance.
"Tell him it's from a pal with very best wishes."
The boom, boom, boom swelled, and on came the band of the P-A-L. The rabbit hopped through the bars and left, right, left, eyes straight ahead, he marched in front of 8 police captains and right behind the commissioner. And so they came to the pond. The rabbit cut one of his sudden corners and went down to the leaves, where he waited and waited. At last the sun began setting, and the frog appeared under the leaves.
"I didn't dare come out sooner," he said. "That bird, you know, he's been here every day looking for me."
"I brought you something," said the rabbit, taking the frog out of the bright sash he was wearing.
"Oh, my darling boy." For a moment, I thought it was him.
"It's made of glass," said the rabbit.
"Well, that's very nice of you to go to all that trouble."
"Well, he doesn't look so good close by. He's much better from a distance."
"Let's try it."
He took the glass one, swam out to the lily leaf, and placed it thereon.
"You are right," he said. "One could swear it was alive and breathing."
A moment later, they looked up, for a shadow had passed over the leaves above them. There was a swish and a splash. Waves reached up to where they sat. The lily leaf trembled, and the glass frog was gone. The cormorant tossed the frog into the air, and as he caught it, it broke into 1,000 small splinters. The bird swallowed, and then he issued a shrill sound. He coughed and staggered on land, and suddenly fell. A few jerks of his wings, a few kicks of his legs, and he was dead. The full moon rose over the east side. It rode up over Central Park on silvery clouds, and as if an orchestra were tuning all its brasses in the reeds, the music of the frogs began to be heard. They suddenly appeared from all sides. Friends greeted friends, and there were family reunions everywhere, and also the old community singing. A quartet of the deepest basses serenaded the rabbit from the lily leaf. The only thing worthwhile in this world is to make other people happy, said the rabbit to his friend.
Anything that I can do for you? Asked the frog.
Yes, said the rabbit. Help me to find somebody to dance with an elephant.